ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 2nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so. As we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me. Two guests joined me on the program here today. The first, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat Major League Baseball playoffs, college football, and also the NFL. Second half of today's show with Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, regular contributor to VSiN, as well as the Point Spread Weekly newsletter. We'll talk with him about college football, the NFL, and also this week's PGA Tour event, which is out there in the Las Vegas area at TPC Summerlin, the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open. He'll have a lot of thoughts on that to share with us later on in today's show. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. The NHL season starts tonight. There are four games on the docket. Parker Michaels has covered all four of them for us over at bangthebook.com in his daily NHL picks and analysis piece. This is a must-read every single day. Nobody out there does it as good as Parker does in terms of people that actually publish their work. He keeps up with the projected goaltenders, all the injuries, recommended wagers, has ranges where he would play it up to or down to. It's a really tremendous resource, a great piece of information, and we are very, very lucky to have it over at bangthebook.com. Also over there right now, my thoughts on tonight's AL wildcard game between the Rays and the A's, although we will talk about it here on today's show. Also series previews for Twins, Yankees, and Cardinals, Braves, Nationals, Dodgers will come your way later on today. We got tons of football content for the week. My college football power ratings, Danny Vorgs' NFL model projections will come out either tonight or tomorrow morning. We'll have lots of free picks in college football and the NFL for you as well. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start things off with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Excitement for the start of the NHL season. You mentioned Parker Michaels. I read his stuff all the time. I know he's had some health problems in the past. I hope he has a healthy season. I enjoy reading everything he does, and he does a terrific job over there.
Yeah, he definitely does. And for those that don't know, you're a Vegas Golden Knights season ticket holder, so I'm sure you're excited about tonight's matchup. Any lean you want to throw out there for us?
I may end up betting the dog. I'm a fan of certain teams, but when it comes down, I'm a fan of money more than anything. And I think it's a little bit overpriced right now. I usually like to go against teams, for example, St. Louis with the trophy last year. I like to go against teams that are having an award ceremony, that kind of thing. So I'm looking at road dogs tonight, I guess. That's what I'm taking a look at on a smaller card, but we'll see if any of them make my client card. But it all comes down to money when it comes down to the teams I root for. Money is more important. I gotta pay the bills.
Well, let's see if the road dog is on your mind here. In the American League wildcard game tonight out in Oakland, it'll be Charlie Morton and Sean Manaea as the Rays take on the A's. This line in the minus 130 to minus 135 range across the board here. Of course, Brewers backers, I know there were a lot of us out there last night, just thought that price was a little bit too high. And, you know, you're right there. You got Josh Hader on the mound. You got to get six outs to finish it off, and he's unable to do it. Nationals advance. They'll play the Dodgers. Once again, I'll write that series preview up over at bangthebook.com later on today. But what about tonight's wild card game, Brian? How do you sort of see this one playing out?
Yeah, it was interesting from yesterday. I was kicking myself halfway through the game because I thought there was some value on Milwaukee. I didn't play the game at all. And then obviously it's got to go the full nine innings. And they didn't hold on to the lead. And I kind of wanted Milwaukee to win. I'm a big underdog guy when it comes to cities. And although Washington hasn't had a lot of success in the playoffs, but I like the teams that don't get there very often. And I would have liked to have seen that. But tonight's game, an unfortunate situation is I want both these teams to win. I like both these teams. They're both low low payroll type of teams. Neither team has a lot of success. I mean, Tampa's had good success for where they're at, but they play in a division with the Red Sox and the Yankees. So it's always a grind for Tampa Bay to make it to the playoffs. And here we are, one of them's going to be eliminated and 27 outs. And I hate that part of baseball, the play-in game, that kind of thing. It's frustrating, but that's the rules right now, and we got to live with them. I haven't put up my play yet, but it will be on Tampa Bay. A lot of it comes down to Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton, you know, you look over his he faced the A's twice this year. His game score is 65-78. Manaea hasn't faced Tampa Bay this year, but he's done well, 61 in his three career starts against Tampa Bay. And when I mention game scores, I'm talking about league average is 50. So anything above 50 is a player you want to back. But Tampa Bay's hit lefties pretty well, 32 and 25, very similar to their 64-41. But Oakland has lived off of lefties this year, 35 and 14, as opposed to 62 and 51. So I think Charlie Martin could go deep in this game, a righty against this Oakland team. And I'm getting plus money here on one of the best road teams in baseball, Tampa Bay 48-33 on the season. I really wish both these teams weren't playing each other, but they are, and I find some value on Tampa Bay here.
Yeah, I find some value on Tampa Bay here as well. I do like the first five a little bit more than the full game, just because, I mean, we saw it last night. You know, sometimes these bullpens can be a little bit finicky in the postseason. You know, it all depends on reliever usage, when guys are deployed. Hey, Milwaukee had it set up perfectly last night, being able to use Hader in those two high-leverage innings. He doesn't get the job done, and not all of it entirely his fault. The hit-by-pitch, very questionable. The blooper that fell in center field that kind of, you know, kept the rally going. Then the ground ball single, and, of course, everything that happened with that. So, you know, again, sometimes some crazy things just happen in the late innings here. I do like Morton against the A's, as you mentioned. I mean, Morton's a guy, even with the juiced ball here this year, allowed fewer home runs in 194 and two-thirds innings than he allowed last season in 167 innings, throws high fastballs with premium velocity. Oakland was a bottom five offense and weighted on base average on fastballs up in the zone at 94 plus miles per hour. So I think Morton matches up really well against this Oakland lineup. As you mentioned as well, Oakland very right-handed heavy. The thing that I kind of worry about and waffle back and forth a little bit on this game is the Rays did have the second highest strikeout percentage against left-handed pitching this year. Now, Sean Manaea, only five starts, not as you would probably expect a guy like that to struggle in a situation like this, because he didn't face the greatest of lineups in September, hasn't pitched all year long. I do like Oakland's bullpen quite a bit, so that's why I'd probably look first five as opposed to full game. But you know, one of the things I will point out here, just in general, as we sort of transition to talking about the other two series that we knew about going into yesterday's wildcard game, the managers play such a big role here at this time of the year, because they really do have to put their players in a position to succeed. Whether or not the players execute or not, you know, remains to be seen. But managerial decisions are very, very important here. And I think that really is going to be on display here in this series between the Twins and the Yankees, because you have two iffy starting rotations that if you leave them out there too long against these offenses, they can get into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, they definitely can. You mentioned my wife even asked me, she goes, who's the Twins' number one starter? And I said, well, it's Barrios, but, you know, they've had other guys that have pitched well at times. But, yeah, your team is, you know, obviously now with the starter coming back from the Yankees, who's really their number one, came back late in the season. He's looking really good. But, yeah, neither team is really loaded from a starting pitcher standpoint. But I like the bullpens on both these teams. Minnesota, as the year went on, continued to add players. They have good players in the minors who were good for them last year that just didn't make the team this year. And that tells you that their bullpen is much stronger this year than it was in the past. Two teams who rely on home runs. So anytime you find teams that rely on the home runs, I think it opens up a lot of value on taking the underdogs in these games, because the variety of the game scores is going to be different depending on who gets the home run. You know, one night you may not get any home runs, next night you get five. So the variable in that regard opens up a lot of chances to make some money playing the underdog. I think that's going to be my general thought going into the series, is because neither team basically plays the National League ball the old National League ball, where you just try to get a guy on base, steal a base, bunt him over, that kind of thing. Neither one of these teams do that. So whoever hits the homers is going to win. So I think there's going to be a value on playing the underdogs here, and that's the way I'm going to look at it. Obviously, every game is different. You have to look at the pitching matchups and how long they'll be going. Obviously, it's a little bit different, as you pointed out, in the playoffs, where during the regular season, you know, you can afford to lose a few games. So if you get a pitcher who doesn't get off to a great start, they can keep him in there. You know, Scherzer went yesterday. I didn't understand why he pitched Scherzer in that game. I know he probably deserved it from his career standpoint, but he hadn't been pitching well, so, you know, the last couple of months, and put your whole season on him. It's something I wouldn't have done. But that's the way I'm going to look at that series so far. We'll see how it goes from a game-to-game basis.
Yeah, when I wrote up my preview and actually was able to put in the odds, it was Yankees minus 245 at BetOnline. I'm sure other places were in a fairly similar range at the open. Now it's Yankees minus 215, which implies about a 68% likelihood that they win this series. I still think that's a little bit high. I certainly liked it more when you were getting the plus $2 price that was out there. I will look at this from a game-by-game standpoint. And, you know, really, as you mentioned, I mean, the Yankees have the better bullpen between these two teams, but the rotations really aren't that far apart. And both of these offenses are pretty good. Now, of course, when you look at the Minnesota Twins here, and, you know, we talked about this last year with the Indians. I know I wrote about this in my preview when they played Houston. You do have to factor in that, you know, the Twins got to beat up on really bad pitching for 57 games within the division. Now, of course, New York had the same luxury for 38 games with the Blue Jays and the Orioles. But, you know, when you look at the Twins here, they were ninth in OPS at 761 and sixth in slugging percentage at 443 against teams that were 500 or better. Against teams with losing records, they were first in OPS by a large margin and first in slugging percentage. So they did take advantage of the bad teams that they played, and specifically the bad pitching staffs that they played. The Yankees, on the other hand, were third in OPS against both of them, against teams that had a 500 or better record and also teams that had a losing record. So maybe there's some more consistency on the New York side, which is why I would expect them to advance. But with the price that's out there, I think maybe a small lean of a position on the Twins, expecting that the Yankees probably do win the series, just not 68% of the time like the line indicates.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned beating up on the bad teams. That's what the Cleveland Indians have done the last few years. And that's one of the reasons I didn't mind Cleveland not winning that division. I would rather see somebody out there. Excitement in Minnesota is going to be so much more than it would be in Cleveland, because Cleveland's been there, done that. And this was not a very, in my opinion, not a playoff team in Cleveland. So I didn't mind them losing out to Minnesota. Sure, I'm an Indians fan, but for the betterment of baseball, I'd like to see a different team in there. And I just hope Minnesota makes it the series and doesn't get swept, because that would look terrible for the division as a whole and for the city of Minnesota, because the Vikings are a team right now that doesn't look like they're going to be going as deep in the playoffs as they would like, with some problems there for the football team. So I'm rooting for the Twins. We'll see what happens.
Well, and one last point I'll make about this series is that I think both of these front offices are very, very smart. Obviously, the Yankees have more financial ability than the Twins and really than, you know, most teams in baseball. But Brian Cashman's done a great job sort of redefining what the identity is of this Yankees team. They're actually developing a lot from within now. Yeah, they still go out there and get some big free agents now and then, but a lot of guys homegrown, a lot of guys that they've just had big player development wins with, guys like Gio Urshela. So the Yankees are a lot different than they used to be. The Twins also very smart. And I was extremely impressed with first-year manager Rocco Baldelli in some of those higher leverage situations, using Taylor Rogers for multi-inning saves, pulling starters early in the game, going to some of his better relievers in the middle innings in those leverage situations. This is going to be a really fascinating series from a managerial standpoint, because I think Aaron Boone is good at that. I think Rocco Baldelli is really good at that. So this is going to be a good series in terms of if you're somebody who likes the in-game decision-making, the nerd type of stuff like I do, I guess should be a really good series here in the ALDS. And again, I will have a preview over at bangthebook.com for whoever the Houston Astros wind up playing, whether it's the Rays or the A's. But Brian, one more series to talk about here, the NLDS between the Cardinals and the Braves. And I'm really interested to get your take on this series. Braves, $1.35 favorite, Cardinals plus 115 on the take back here. Miles Mikolas, Dallas Keuchel, the pitching matchup for game one. Jack Flaherty will go in game two and in game five if necessary. What are you seeing from this series here between these two teams?
Yeah, the big advantage is Flaherty right now. There hasn't been a better pitcher in the second half of the season. He's been untouchable. Not big fans of either starter going in game one. So I will look at it a little bit more. I may end up with an over ticket, depending on, you know, some things. Then we'll do a little bit more handicapping. But, you know, this is a coin flip series. And who would have thought that halfway through the season that St. Louis had really struggled, just had not played nearly as well as we've seen in the past out of the Cardinals. But they picked it up, and they go into the playoffs as one of the hotter teams. I'm not a big believer. A lot of people will look at who ends up going into the playoffs hot, who ends up going backing into the playoffs, that kind of thing. To me, it's like a totally different it's obviously a totally different season when you go to the playoffs as you do in the regular season. But a lot of teams are able to rest players, and we see many teams in Major League Baseball giving a rest to a lot of their players coming down towards the playoffs, especially teams like the Dodgers. They had a different lineup out there every night. One thing that concerned me out of Houston was they usually kept the same guys in the lineup all the time. They had a few guys that they would try out there. They didn't play a whole lot. But for the most part, Houston was a team that played the same lineup pretty much all the time, whereas the Dodgers played their entire bench. I think that will be an advantage for the Dodgers come playoff time because of that. The bench guys will be a little bit fresher, and that's something you always want to keep a count on because of all the pitching changes in the playoffs, going from lefty to righty, all the pitch hits situations that you don't usually see in the regular season. I'm rooting for the Braves here. It's been a while since the Braves have been good, rooting for them here. But full respect for both teams, good organizations, probably great organizations when it comes down to it. And we'll see which one can go up and advance here. But I think the line's pretty much what I thought it would be. I think there's slight value on Atlanta. But at this point, I didn't play any futures. So I'm just going game to game in this grouping.
I'm going to look the other way here. I'm going to look at St. Louis as the team that has a little bit of value. And, you know, again, you look at game one here coming up tomorrow night, and you've only got Dallas Keuchel a minus 130 or so favorite. So it's not like that's an unwinnable game for St. Louis. If they steal that one and they've got Flaherty in game two, they've got a very good chance to go up 2-0. So I like St. Louis at the plus 115 price. Again, if they win one of these two games in Atlanta, this series very likely to go five games. You get Flaherty again on full rest in game five, plus 115 with St. Louis with Flaherty against anybody right now. Probably a pretty good bet to make. What the thing about this series is this, and I agree with the Braves being favored. Both of these teams are very solid across the board. The difference is the Braves have some star power in guys like Ronald Acuna, in guys like Freddie Freeman. The Cardinals' best position player, Paul Goldschmidt, had kind of a down year by his standards. So both of these teams are solid and consistent, but the Braves appear to be a little bit flashier. So I think that a lot of people will gravitate towards the Braves because of that. But I think St. Louis here, again, probably getting two Flaherty starts in what would be a five-game series. I think the plus 115 price tag, a pretty decent look there for them. So I guess we'll see how this one plays out. And I certainly don't dislike your approach here of going on a game-by-game basis. But, Brian, before we transition away from baseball, you know, what's your World Series pick, and who do they wind up beating there in the final round?
Well, unfortunately, I've got to be chalk heavy here. I think the Dodgers and the Astros are the two best teams, along with the Yankees, which to me would be the third best team. But Houston over the Dodgers, and that's interesting. I'm subscriber to The Athletic, which is a tremendous source of written material. I would recommend everybody pay for that. They have seven baseball writers that broke down the teams to go to the World Series. All seven took Houston to win. Six of them took Houston to beat the Dodgers. One took Houston to beat St. Louis. I hate to be chalk heavy, and I hate to agree with everybody else, but after watching these teams all season long, these are the two best teams, and anything can happen in a short series. We've seen it before where the better team will get swept in a four-game series against a bad team. It happens. But if I had to put any money on it, which I haven't, like I said, I haven't played any series, I think it's Houston beating the Dodgers in the World Series, and unfortunately, it's the same old, same old, and I'd prefer other teams to get in it. But if you're looking for the best teams, those are the two best teams.
Yep, I completely agree with you. I've got Houston over the Dodgers here as well. I mean, the pitching depth for both of those teams is just scary. And the position player depth, very strong for both of those teams too. And, you know, I prioritize A.J. Hinch as well over, you know, over Dave Roberts and what the Dodgers are able to put out there. So, you know, I'll take Houston over the Dodgers here in the World Series as well. As we transition over to the football side here, this part of Bang the Book Radio brought to you by the Trends app, TRNDS. You know, the last time that I tried to validate a betting idea using historical trends, it's a struggle. You know, there's so much information out there, a lot of historical information, a lot of head-to-head information, especially here with conference play going on in college football. You know, it's difficult and it's time-consuming to pull together some of these numbers, how teams do coming off of a loss, how they do head-to-head against a certain opponent, how do they do in certain weather conditions or with a specific spread range after a bye, so on and so forth. So many trends that are out there, and fortunately, the Trends app simplifies access to powerful data, and it allows users to self-source their own queries and also to share meaningful sports betting trends all from their mobile phone. Don't just be a consumer of stats. Create your own views on the game. The Trends app, TRNDS, is available for free on the App Store for iOS users. However, they're giving away a free month of the premium subscription tier to the first 100 users who sign up. And the way to do that is to go to www.trends-sports. Again, TRNDS-sports.com/bangthebook to sign up. Again, you can identify new betting angles. You don't have to scour box scores or read through Twitter or anything like that. You can set up your own queries and also share them from your mobile phone. So again, the first 100 users to sign up at www.trends-sports.com/bangthebook will get a free month of the premium subscription tier. And once again, that's the Trends app, TRNDS. Brian, as we look at college football here, as I mentioned, you know, we're going through conference play here now, so a lot of familiarity between these two teams. We've talked on our previous two shows of Bang the Book Radio about different power ratings adjustments that we've made. Were there some big ones for you here going from week five to week six?
Not really. They're pretty much settled in at this point. There's a few that moved a little bit, but no, for the most part. You know, Nebraska, I guess, down a little bit. Ohio State up. Ohio State's just been amazing to me how good this team has been. We knew it would be good offensively, but the defense has just been terrific. And but, no, for the most part, overall, at this point of the season, you should be pretty much on within a couple of points of every game for your power ratings based on what we've seen so far. We've got enough data points. One thing I like to do, and I've heard Brad Powers talk about this also, is every couple of weeks, I think he said he does it every month, but go back and rejudge the teams that you originally saw, because I'm going through some of my numbers here, and I said, you know what, I thought this team was going to be really good. They looked really good early in this one game, and they failed. Now the teams that they played early on, I said, now I take a little bit off of them because they played some of these teams that we thought were going to be good, and after three or four data points have not turned out that way. So it's something to go back, and it's just a double check. To me, that's more valuable than changing on the week-to-week basis based on what happened the week before, because now we do have more data points, and you can go back and say, you know what, this teams better than I thought they were going to be, and give the teams that played them a little bit of a boost.
All right, so as we look at a couple of games here, and we'll focus specifically on the MAC, and you know, we'll talk about a lot of games on tomorrow's show with Brad Powers, who you just mentioned there. But game 321-322 is a game I definitely wanted to pick your brain about, Ball State and Northern Illinois, because this is one of the biggest overlays in my power ratings. I actually have Northern Illinois a double-digit favorite in this game. Again, game 321-322. Northern Illinois opened a 6.5-point favorite. This line got bet down to 4.5. Now it got bet back up to 5. So we're kind of sitting there waiting to see what happens with this line the rest of the week. What do you think about this matchup here with the Huskies at home?
Yeah, it's from my perspective, I take a look at how the teams have done so far this year. Obviously, I'm looking at Phil Steele's game grades. Basically, a Ball State is looking at roughly about an 82 maybe on the season combined. Northern Illinois is looking probably about an 80, 85 or so combined. So that would put it in the general range of what it's at right now, maybe a 6 or something like that for Northern Illinois. But I go back and I take a look at individual stats in these games, and I've been pretty impressed by Ball State. When you take a look at the schedules, in FBS games, they played Indiana, Florida Atlantic, and NC State. Those teams are combined based on certain numbers, 99, whereas Northern Illinois played Utah, Nebraska, and Vanderbilt, which is about 105. So basically, Northern Illinois played like a 6-point tougher schedule out of the FBS teams. But when I look at overall numbers, and this does include each game, each team played one FCS goal. But I was pretty impressed by these Ball State numbers. Ball State on the season, offensive yards per play are up about 0.5, a half a yard each game. And that was playing Indiana, Florida Atlantic, and North Carolina State. Now, not great teams, but Indiana, I like Indiana. I think they're a top 40 team. NC State in that same regard, top 40, 50. Florida Atlantic's been a disappointment. But for them to play these teams, is pretty impressive to have a plus yards per play situation, whereas in Northern Illinois is actually down a little bit. They're down about 1.3 yards per play. But I'm taking a look at the situation for Ball State defensively. They played those four games. They've allowed 6 passing touchdowns, but they picked the opponents off 6 times. That's pretty impressive for a middle-tier MAC team to be able to do that. Northern Illinois, on the other hand, has given up 5 touchdowns with only 1 interception. Passing rating for the teams, Ball State's 148, Northern Illinois is 127. So even though my number is showing slight Northern Illinois, looking at what Ball State has done, I can see some of the reason why some money has come in on Ball State here, open 6.5, now down to 5. So I'm going to lay off of this game. I think it's a good game to watch. I know I've talked in the past about how Northern Illinois plays for the conference games, so that might be one of the reasons why their numbers are a little bit disappointing. But I've been pretty impressed by Ball State, so I'm going to sit back, and I don't see an edge in this one, so I'll sit back and watch it.
Well, one thing that Kyle Hunter mentioned on Monday's show, Ball State 6th in the country in tempo. So they are moving quite a bit quicker here this year. So maybe the value in this game potentially on the total, where we have seen a move up from 53 to 55.5 as the Cardinals are playing a little bit quicker here over the course of the season. One more game I want to touch on here with you quickly. It was going to be Auburn and Florida. Got a listener request to talk about that with Brad Powers tomorrow. So we'll save that game for then. But 367-368 here, it's a good game for us to talk about because this line has done nothing but move down. Western Michigan at Toledo. Toledo was a 4-point favorite at the open. Now it's anywhere from 1 to 2 out there, with Toledo a very short favorite in the Glass Bowl.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I thought the line was right at about 4. Probably made it roughly 3.5, 4. And now we're seeing the lines going down. Actually, Pinnacle's at -1 now, -111. And we all know that Pinnacle and Bookmaker are the two sharp national books that the sharp money is at. So the money's coming in on Western Michigan. Somebody is looking to play Western Michigan. I faded Western Michigan as my play last week. It didn't look good from a scoring standpoint. I did get the cover, but Western Michigan, when you look at that game last week from a yardage standpoint, how the game played out, it was all turnovers that they kept them getting off to that good start last week. Toledo's not the same Toledo teams as we've seen in the past, but I just think Western Michigan is a little overrated at this point. Like I said, this was one of the games that I really didn't have much of an edge on originally, but now as the week gets on, I'm probably going to take a look at this game because the line's a little bit cheap here, and Toledo playing in the Glass Bowl is always a strong home favorite here, and so that's what I'm leaning now. I need to find out why everybody's on Western Michigan, because last week I couldn't figure out why everybody was on Western Michigan too until I released the play, and then later on in the week more people followed me when they looked at the actual stats, and the line went down a couple of points, but we'll have to see. But yeah, Toledo's on my short list at this point.
But before we exit the MAC here, and I do want to talk about one NFL game with you to finish up the segment, the next time Akron has the audacity to ask me for money, because you and I both Akron grads, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to handle that situation yet. But if you want my money, don't look like shit against UMass.
Well, actually, for people who follow me on Twitter, I put out a spite bet on that game. I said, this is crazy. I said, there's no way Akron should be favored in this regard. So I got, I think, plus 280 back on UMass. So I actually have a little bit of money here that I could donate this year to Akron. And, hey, if Akron's that bad every week and I could take advantage of going against them, sure, I'll send some money in.
I would send some money with the note that says, make sure this goes to the soccer team, because the football team, you know, sure as hell isn't worthy of it right now. Although, you know what, the football team might need it. I don't know. Maybe they got to start they got to get some better bag men down there in the Rubber City. You know, they got to start paying off some of these recruits a little bit better and actually get some talent there in town. In any event.
Yeah, they're all going to California now.
Yeah, right. In any event, we'll stay local here, and we'll talk about one NFL game with you here, Brian. And let's try that again. We'll fast forward all the way to Monday Night Football here. The Browns and the 49ers. And a lot of people breaking limbs, jumping off the Browns bandwagon as quickly as they possibly can. And then last week, the Browns go and beat the Ravens outright and really dominated that game for all intents and purposes. Now they go on the road, Monday Night Football against the 49ers, who are coming off of a bye. 49ers, a 3.5-point favorite, just about market-wide, couple of fours out there as well.
Yeah, I was one of those jumpers. I like Cleveland. I wasn't ready to buy on them yet, but the way they looked the last couple of weeks, it was sickening. And we've seen how the Cavaliers have looked the last couple of years without LeBron. That's the way it looked for Cleveland for me. And it was frustrating. But, yeah, they played well last week. But keep in mind, I liked Baltimore to win this division coming into the season. I originally was sour on Baltimore. And the more I read, the more I saw, the more I liked Baltimore. But keep in mind, that Baltimore pass defense has really been bad lately. And the Browns took advantage of that. San Francisco was an extra week off. Is a nice advantage here. Cleveland coming off of that big divisional must-win game. I wouldn't read too much into Cleveland based on that Baltimore defense. Like I said, I think Cleveland comes into this game. It was a team that a lot of people really liked coming into the season. People now have a buy sign on Cleveland. I don't. I think there's some value here on San Francisco, especially if you can lay the 3.5 here before it gets to four. Bookmaker right now, 4-105. The value, you know, Cleveland got to travel all the way to the West Coast for a team who had the week off. San Francisco is one of those teams that I thought was a little overrated coming into the season, but they've done nothing to discourage anybody. And I think there's some value on value on San Francisco here. Probably be a high-scoring game, but then again, Cleveland won't have that defensive backfield that Baltimore has, and so we'll see how it goes, but I never thought I would say this, but it'll be nice to not have Cleveland on a primetime game, because there's other teams that I'd much rather see on a daily basis play these games than Cleveland. But first time I've ever been able to say that for, 20 years? But yeah, I lean with San Francisco here.
I like San Francisco a little bit here too. I mean, you know, that week one game where Jimmy G kind of struggled a little bit there against Tampa Bay, come to find out that, you know, despite what the stats would show from last week's game, that Tampa Bay defense is pretty improved with Todd Bowles. So I give San Francisco a little bit of a pass there. Also the long trip out to Florida, dominate Cincinnati, and they dominated that box score against Pittsburgh too. They turned the football over way too much. They should have won and covered that game comfortably. So if the turnover issues are fixed, and you know it's obviously a big if here coming out of the bye week, could be a tough spot for Cleveland, who, by the way, then hosts Seattle the following week, a Seattle team on extra rest because they play Thursday night football this week. So not only are the Browns in a little bit of a tricky spot this week, I think next week at home against the Seattle team, a lot of people don't really like very much. I think that's a good spot to fade Cleveland. So I don't know if I'll be on San Francisco here, but I hope the Browns win outright and I get some extra value to fade them October 13th in a tough spot against Seattle.
That is something that could set us up with a pretty nice number.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
It's video day on Wednesdays. I'll be heading in for videos. Just want to let everybody know, been on fire in college football, 15-1 the last 2 weeks, 15-1. I've got two plays up, one in Conference USA, one game up in the Big Ten right now, still working on the card for this upcoming weekend. But this is about as high as you get. And a lot of people like to ride hot streaks. So if you're one of those guys, go over and pick up our plays right now over at wagertalk.com. Still working on the card. I gave you my baseball play for today. I'm going to play Tampa Bay. Still working on hockey and weekend football. Looking for another huge weekend once again.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. Brian, enjoy the night's game tonight. Have a couple adult beverages for me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great, and I'd like to say go Knights, but unfortunately, I probably won't be.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Once again, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. And, hey, if you're out there in Vegas and you happen to see him at the Knights game, go ahead and say hi and you know, give them some shit if the Sharks don't wind up winning that game here in tonight's opening night action in the NHL. And again, I will remind you here, for those that maybe only listen to certain segments, those that missed the top of the show, Parker Michaels' NHL article over at bangthebook.com is absolutely phenomenal. The best resource you will have here all season long in the NHL. So make sure you check that out on a daily basis. Bookmark it, subscribe to notifications. You'll get a notification when that gets published, as well as some of our other signature content at bangthebook.com, like my college football power ratings, like Danny Borges' NFL model projections, like some of the other stuff that we have going on a weekly basis over there. So subscribe to notifications over at bangthebook.com. Then you'll get Parker's article right when he puts it up. You can hop on those prices, and it's a really good opportunity for you to not only cash some winners in the NHL, but also learn a whole hell of a lot about betting on hockey. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is with Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, regular contributor to the VSiN Point Spread Weekly Newsletter, and also VSiN on the Air. Wes, how's it going today, man?
I'm good, Adam. How are you, man?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here. And, you know, I know that you're not necessarily the high-volume handicapper that you used to be since moving out to Las Vegas, but we're adding the NHL to the list now. The NBA comes around shortly. College basketball is, what, 34 days away, I think, 33 days away, something like that. We're getting to crunch time, man, where there just really aren't enough hours in the day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm looking at the fact that the NHL starts today, and I mean, some guys that really specialize in that. I mean, I bet that, but I don't consider myself a specialist in that sport by any stretch of the imagination. And I was just thinking about that. I'm like, I feel like I'm so far behind because the fact that it just kind of snuck up on me. I knew that preseason was going on, but it's like it's October 2nd. We're already at the opening night. So, I mean, probably because I have not had the time with football and everything else going on to put in the work in terms of really evaluating every team and whatnot, I'm probably going to be looking for spots a little bit. And I think the NHL is one of those sports, because I think we all have the ones that are our strengths that we put the time in, whether we're making a number on the game or we're doing power ratings or and doing individual team evals. There are some that we do personally, and then there's some where we listen to some other people. And I have talked to so many people since I've moved out here that really do that, because it's impossible to, I think, do your own handicap necessarily for every single sport. So there are some others where if you decide you want to do that, you got to trust some other folks' judgment that know more than you do about a certain sport, whether it's NHL, whether it's NBA, what have you, where you may, if you're going to bet those sports, just kind of have to pick spots early, like scheduling spots or, you know, for instance, the Capitals game tonight, the Capitals and the Blues, where that's that, obviously, that ring and banner night spot where you would traditionally fade the Stanley Cup winner on the ceremony night. I mean, now there's a little bit of a wrinkle because Ovechkin is questionable, but I mean, usually that's an angle that I would look to play. And that's probably what I'll have to do at least early on in the season in the NHL, is just play angles and scheduling spots.
Speaking of scheduling spots, I do write an article every week over at bangthebook.com with those for both the NHL and the NBA. Once the NBA season gets going, and you'll get those daily winter sports just lend themselves so well to situational handicapping. And you obviously make sure you're trying to get the best price that you can, but a lot of spots available in both the NHL and the NBA. And not to go off on a tangent here, Wes, but you know, I'm in the Cleveland area. It's got a pretty rich hockey tradition overall, you know, going back to the Barons and all the Calder Cups they won, the Crusaders. We've always had a minor league team here. What was that transition like for you going from the Indianapolis area to Las Vegas with all the hype about the Golden Knights, and especially on the betting side, so much more interest in hockey handicapping?
Yeah, it is really interesting, because I think when you look at the fact that on the surface, you wouldn't think that this would be a hockey town, because one of the things about Las Vegas, it is a very new professional sport type of town. You have not had one of the big four really out here for very long. I mean, so people here are kind of just learning how to be fans of a hometown team. I think it was easier with the Knights, because in terms of all the transplants out here, none of them really, you know, very few of them at least had a hardcore NHL team. A lot of that is more NFL or maybe more NBA oriented, where it's like you have people from all different places, so they're fans of different teams. Now, by and large, the NBA, this is by and large a Laker town. But you look in like the NFL, you have obviously Raider fans, but you have people from the Bay Area, so you have 49er fans, you have Charger fans, you have a lot of Bronco fans, you have people from New York, you have people from Chicago. So you have fans of so many teams in this market. So I think with the Knights, I mean, the fact that hockey fandom really doesn't travel, and they were the first tier, people that did get behind them, and it sure as hell helped that they had so much success and go to the Stanley Cup Finals in the first year, where, you know, nobody really expected it. I mean, we saw all the stories ad nauseum about the couple 100-to-1 tickets on the Golden Knights that people just bet just to kind of do it, whether it was $5, $10, or a little bit more, where they were just taking shots on this team. But I mean, this town does love the Knights. I mean, I see merchandise everywhere. It's covered extensively. All the preseason games were actually on local television this year, the local ABC affiliate. So, you know, if they're going to run those games, evidently it's been worth their while, and they're seeing numbers and seeing a lot of support for this team.
All right, well, let's talk some football here, and let's start in the NFL, and then we'll finish up with college football. This isn't a game you sent over to me that's on your radar, but I am kind of intrigued by it, and it is the standalone Thursday night game, the Rams and the Seahawks. And if you would have told me that here in week 5, Seattle would be favored over the Rams, I would have probably called you crazy, because the perception of the Seahawks was so low coming into the year. Rams off of winning the NFC, as we all know. I'm not surprised at this point in time to see where this line is, given the body of work for both of these two teams. But we talk about buying low and selling high and, you know, trying to ascertain when the right time is to get on a team. Is this the right time to get on the Rams or no?
Yeah, I'm debating that myself because, look, Seattle's lost their last three. They were swept last year by the Rams, where Seattle was kind of the king, were kind of the kings of this division for several years, and now the Rams have kind of taken over that role. But look, we know Seattle always has one of the best home field advantages in the NFL. I mean, and if you use default home field advantage three, if that's what you say that it is, well, Seattle's is not three. Seattle's is one of the best. Seattle's is 4.5 or 5 or however you want to rate it. It's not the traditional three. And then you have some of the not the lesser teams, but maybe the teams that don't sell as many tickets, the Jacksonville's, the Miami's, the Florida teams, where their home field advantage is maybe 1.5 or maybe 2. Same with the Chargers. So, I mean, the fact that they are favorite in this game, but they're only favored by 2, I think tells you that the market thinks that the Rams are the slightly better team, you know, that they're probably on a neutral would be about 2 or 2.5. And that seems probably about right. You know, I'm not sure what I'm doing with this game yet. And I may not know until tomorrow when the game is actually played, what I'm going to do, because I was on the Bucs against the Rams last week and they did out yard the Bucs. But the Rams still gave up darn near 500 yards to Tampa Bay. So it wasn't just all the turnovers. I mean, Tampa Bay and Jameis Winston was able to throw that ball down the field. And he only got sacked, I believe, one time. And you saw that the Rams the week before really pressured the Browns and got to Baker Mayfield, who only goes on to get sacked one time in Baltimore. So it's such a week-to-week thing. And, I mean, and we talk about this all the time with the recency bias. Nothing is more week-to-week than the NFL. So you're seeing Seattle off a, I think, a workmanlike road performance. I mean, not overly impressive, but kind of winning the way they do, mixing of running and passing and pretty solid defense and not having Russell Wilson throw 50 times. I mean, I think he threw like mid to high 20s, which is, seems about right for their success. But I can't argue with them being favorite in this spot.
So we look ahead to Sunday here. First game on the board, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, 451, 452. And, you know, I think it's tough to sort of figure out what Pittsburgh is at this point in time. They did cover against San Francisco, but they didn't really deserve to. They got badly outgained in that game. Just happened to win the turnover battle by enough to cover losing by 4 as a 6.5-point dog. Then they play really well on Monday night against Cincinnati, a Bengals team that just may be in a complete state of disarray. And Baltimore came back down to earth last week with that loss to the aforementioned Cleveland Browns. Ravens a 3.5-point favorite here on the road at Heinz Field. You're kind of interested in Pittsburgh here.
Yeah, that would be my lean here. And, I mean, look, I'm not sure where Pittsburgh is at this point. I still think they have some decent talent on this team. And, I mean, if you look at how poorly they played, losing Ben, and then he wasn't even that great to start the season. And then, like you said, getting badly outplayed at San Francisco, where they got 5 turnovers and couldn't even win the ball game outright. So that was a negative for Pittsburgh. And I still think that they're slowly taking the training wheels off Mason Rudolph here. They're still not really letting him throw the ball down the field. I think 16 of their completions were to running backs last week. And you saw they were doing different things. A lot of because they haven't really been able to run the ball like they had the previous year. So they're using those running backs, Samuels and Connor, a lot in the short passing game. Well, clearly Baltimore's seen that on film, and you would think that they would defend that better. But looking at Baltimore, we've always kind of taken for granted that they have a really elite defense in the NFL. And I still don't think it's a bad defense, but
it's not what it was. I mean, they gave up 530 yards to the Browns last week. They couldn't get pressure on Mayfield, and that's where I think the big difference is with this Baltimore defense, because they've always had guys that could get to the quarterback, T. Sizzle, and dating back to, you know, Michael McCrary and some of their defensive linemen in the 2000s, and then when they had the linebackers, when you had Sharper and you had Ray Lewis and all of these different players. The defense isn't a vintage Baltimore defense, and that's why I thought maybe 3.5 was a little high. I thought maybe 3 would be a little more fair, but you're getting the hook with it, and at that price, I would have to lean with the Steelers.
I mean, in today's day and age for the NFL, you have to be able to pressure the quarterback, because all these offensive schemes are just designed as RPOs, or there's motion to create miscommunication. You don't just line it up and run it at anybody anymore. So if you're not getting to the quarterback, the other team is moving the football on you. And if you watch any NFL game, unless it's a bottom-of-the-barrel, completely awful quarterback, if the pass rush doesn't get there, that team's moving the ball. So I agree with what you're saying about Baltimore, where also they've had the secondary injuries. Jimmy Smith's been out. You know, Marlon Humphrey's been kind of dinged up a little bit too. But if you don't get to the quarterback, you don't have success in this league anymore. And I think that's an important distinction to make there with Baltimore and Pittsburgh game. And it makes me sort of wonder what you're looking at here in game 471, 472, Denver and the Chargers, where we expected Vic Fangio to get this defense to the quarterback, and it just hasn't happened yet. So are you looking for that to be the case this week? Is it just too many injuries for the Chargers? What is it you like about Denver here?
Yeah, and I mean, it's a lean at this point. I actually think this NFL card is really tough, kind of the toughest of the year, because numbers are starting to get adjusted. I mean, we've seen these road underdogs actually fare very well over the course of the season, especially last week, which is usually pretty good for me by and large. But I think these numbers are going to start to get adjusted and kind of come back to earth a little bit. With Denver, I mean, I was on them last week. They were my one loss in my super contest entry. They lose Bradley Chubb for the year, which clearly is a huge blow to this team. It's not even so much if I were to end up being on Denver here, I don't think it's, you know, that I'm in love with Denver necessarily. It may be a little bit more of a fate of the Chargers, who are one of a myriad of teams in the NFL that I think are dealing with offensive line issues. We saw it materialize Monday night with the Bengals. They've got offensive line issues. Even though they played better and only allowed one sack, the Browns have offensive line issues. Atlanta, Houston, so many of these teams out there, and there's probably several others that I didn't name, that have some real offensive line problems in there, and it's a glaring weakness. So I just saw the Chargers 6.5, but they're not quite at 7. So that says maybe there isn't a ton of belief right now in the Chargers, because I think that's a team that some years you catch the breaks at them and some years you don't. And that's a team that I think by and large caught a lot of the breaks last year. They didn't have that usual inconsistent swoon that has kind of been a staple of Chargers football over the last several years. But you also got to look at the fact that they do not have a legit home field advantage playing in that small stadium in Carson while they're waiting for the new stadium to be built. And now it's starting to be materialized in the line, because if they had a better home field, I would have to believe they'd be 7 or 7.5 over Denver, considering that Denver's 0-4 right now. Now, do they look like the other dregs that are 0-4, the Bengals and the Redskins and the Dolphins and I mean, the Jets are still unbeaten, but that's a lot of injuries. But Denver, to me, doesn't look like one of the real dregs of the league. But they don't look good, but they don't look just historically horrible. So they had Jacksonville down, and I thought they really had him beat. They had him down big early, but then Denver's offense just kind of shut down in the second half, and couldn't make a first down, couldn't move the ball. So, you know, maybe it's just kind of a line situation here that that makes me look at the Denver side. But like I was saying, I think this NFL card, this is probably the toughest one we've seen all season.
Well, and I think, too, it's important to sort of look at this Denver defense and look at Vic Fangio specifically. And, you know, outside of his stint in San Francisco, where the 49ers were really good his first year as a defensive coordinator, there are often a lot of growing pains, you know, because I think it's a pretty complicated scheme to learn. I think there's a lot of verbiage in this, you know, defense that's tough to figure out, a lot of communication errors, stuff like that. It took, you know, two seasons really, and also acquiring some really good personnel for the Bears to, you know, master this Vic Fangio scheme. So I think for the Denver team here as well, you know, they're not generating takeaways. That's a problem. They're not defending the running game well. That's a problem. But you have to think that they do get better on that side of the ball as the season goes along. So maybe this 0-4 kind of creates a little bit of hidden value on the Broncos to take them later on in the season. And maybe that starts here this week.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. That may be I may end up what I'm going to be on. But we talked about it earlier in the season. If you're doing these super contests at the Westgate or the Super or Circus Sports Million, there are going to be weeks where you got to narrow it down to five games. This isn't one of those weeks, at least personally for me. This is one of those where I'm going to have to stretch to really get to five games, because I think that there are some hard spots here. Like you look at something like Green Bay and Dallas, I think that's a really hard spot, because you got two teams coming off their first loss, where it's like, okay, the hype was out on these teams. Now they get brought back down to earth. Now who is going to react? And then also, a lot of these games are going to come down to injury reports. And really looking, and that was what I was able to get a winner on the Raiders last week against my Colts, because I felt the Colts' injuries were kind of being undercompensated, because everybody talks about the skill position players, of course. So T.Y. Hilton was out, and they did really miss T.Y. Hilton. But I felt more so the injuries that they had on defense, with Darius Leonard being out, Malik Hooker being out, secondary being banged up. They had another linebacker out. They had another guy returning who hadn't played all year the first three games. So when you get those injuries, really look, I think, for the defense, and especially on the lines, the offensive and defensive lines, maybe even more so than the skill position guys.
Yeah, that's a good thought. And, you know, hey, we'll see what my super contest picks look like. I'll record that segment Thursday evening for Friday's show. And like you, I'm having a very hard time with this NFL card. So we'll see what I'm able to come up with there for that segment. Let's talk about this Thursday night game over on the college football side here. Temple and East Carolina. We touched on this game a little bit on Monday. Didn't really have a concrete opinion from myself or Kyle Hunter. Seems like you've got some maybe stronger thoughts on this game here. Temple's a double-digit road favorite taking on the Pirates, and you kind of like the dog a little bit.
Yeah, this has been bouncing around. It's now back down to about 11, 11.5. Took a little money in terms of getting up to about 12, 12.5, close to the original number yesterday. But I was on Temple last week over Georgia Tech simply because of the former coach angle, that being Jeff Collins, now at Georgia Tech, facing Temple, his old team. These were guys that all got recruited by Jeff Collins and the majority of his staff that's now down in Atlanta with him in Georgia Tech. So I think these guys clearly wanted a piece of the former coach and to beat the former coach that left them for the better job, so to speak. And now this is an interesting spot for Temple in the fact that they go to an East Carolina team that, look, they're still a work in progress with their coach, who was at James Madison and actually won an FCS title there a couple years ago. But they still do already have three wins, which match each of their last three seasons under Scotty Montgomery. So I think there's at least some positive momentum with the East Carolina program. But really a tough spot for Temple here in the fact that you come off that emotional game with Georgia Tech, and, I mean, they've kind of been Jekyll and Hyde. They upset Maryland when Maryland got all the hype early in the season after beating Syracuse. Then they go to Buffalo and lose. Then they get back up for Georgia Tech. Now they have at East Carolina, who they really dominated the series, 6-0 the last six. But look at the next 3 weeks for Temple. They have their biggest fish in the American Athletic Conference. Like, these are the games that are going to show whether this Temple team's just a solid, decent team or whether they're a dark horse outside contending player in the AAC, because you get Memphis coming in, who may be undefeated, still is undefeated. You go to SMU, who's undefeated early on as well. And then you get UCF, who has won the conference the last several years. So at home on the 26th, and kind of a revenge spot, because if you remember that game last year, they could have probably beaten UCF and unfortunately didn't cover. You get these three conference games back to back to back after East Carolina, which is also a conference game. But I think you may get an East Carolina that's a little more hyped to get a primetime game at home against a solid team. And maybe, I don't want to say go through the motions necessarily, because I'm sure Temple's going to try, but I just think that this is such a tricky spot for them that East Carolina and the double digits had value.
Well, and again, I mean, this is one of those spots where you look at it from a Temple standpoint, they have to get margin to cover the number here because they're a double digit favorite. So yeah, they probably wind up winning the game, but again, to win it by 12 or more points, that's what you're looking at here. And that's why, you know, some of those emotional appeals and some of those situational angles do really matter here in the context of college football. A couple other games I want to touch on with you here, and then we'll finish up with golf. 355, 356, Iowa and Michigan. This number's down from 5.5 to 3.5. Seems like you disagree with the line move a little bit.
Yeah, I do, and I want to lay 3 and see if I could get there. If not, I'll lay the cheapest money line here, which I'm guessing, I'm pulling it up, is about $1.60, $1.65, kind of in that range. This is maybe a chance to buy low. This is kind of one more time to the well with Michigan. They didn't get it done against Wisconsin. But look, the book, I guess, is out on Harbaugh and the fact that he has not really won a lot of these big games. But these games, the kind of second-level big games, I'm not talking the Ohio States, where he's obviously 0-4 against the Buckeyes, or the Notre Dame, kind of the traditional rivals. But against these teams that are kind of ranked where Iowa is, they had two of those games last year against Wisconsin and Penn State, who were both ranked kind of in the low teens where Iowa is right now. And Michigan was able to lay the wood, lower the boom on both of those teams. And I think that they maybe could in this spot as well, because of that, remember that revenge tour that was talked about with Harbaugh, they got everybody except Ohio State, and they hadn't played Iowa the last 2 years. If you remember back in 2016, when Michigan was number 2 in the country at one point in the CFP polls, they go to Iowa and they were like 3-touchdown favorites and they lost outright. So this is at least a chance to get Iowa back here. And with Iowa, I mean, they do their usual Kirk Ferentz thing. I mean, they're off to a good start. They stop the run. They play good defense. They don't do a lot fancy. They do have a senior quarterback in Nate Stanley who's experienced. But to me, I haven't seen anybody seemingly like Michigan this week, and I think that's bearing fruit in the number. So it's almost going to go off as a contrarian favorite here with Michigan. And granted, the competition was Rutgers, but I actually thought that they looked the best that they looked last week. I thought that they looked a lot crisper on offense. They were flying to the football on defense. They probably played the most complete game that they have. And the perception is so low on them right now that I think you're getting value as you're getting closer to 3. And that's what I'd like to lay. But I still think even at this price, I think it's been overcompensated.
One more college football game here. This one's in prime time. And overall, it's not a great week of college football. You've got UCF Cincinnati on Friday, which I think is the best game of the week. Auburn and Florida will be a good one on Saturday. Michigan State and Ohio State, we would expect this to be a better game, and maybe it ultimately ends up being one, but Ohio State's a 20-point favorite here. Do you feel like perception of the Buckeyes is too high? Do you just feel like this is the right type of spot for D'Antonio? What is it you like about Sparty here?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I do like the Buckeyes. I think maybe rating them, you know, number one or number two in college football, which some do, is maybe a little bit much. Because, look, it's so hard to do that because the schedules are unbalanced. I mean, look, I mean, if I was a voter and we were coming out in the polls this week, would I vote Alabama number one? Probably not, because they hadn't played anybody. But eventually they're going to. Eventually Alabama and LSU are going to play. LSU and Auburn are going to play. Alabama, Auburn are going to play. So eventually this is going to even out and you're going to kind of figure it out. But Ohio State has, I think, been more impressive. I think the fact that the defense is way better than it was last year. And it was never a talent issue. So apparently it was a coaching and more of a teaching issue more than it was a talent issue. But look, the Buckeyes have been absolutely super impressive here. They went to Nebraska, and there were a lot of people. I actually liked Nebraska at 18, and they were never in the game, and they got absolutely dominated. And I think maybe that says something about the preseason hype on Nebraska just as much as it says about Ohio State. But now you come home, perception is high. People are saying, well, look at the Buckeyes, man. They might be the best team in the country, and that's going to be the media refrain all week. And then you get a Michigan State team that really, quite frankly, was life and death to beat Indiana. And granted, Indiana was playing their better quarterback, Michael Penix Jr., and had tied the game with a couple minutes ago, and then Michigan State got a touchdown or a late field goal and then a cosmetic safety on a fumble because Indiana had no time left and just had to drop back and try to heave it. They got the pressure and got the late defensive touchdown. But, I mean, Michigan State, we know that the perception is still kind of lowish on them because the offense doesn't always put up big-time numbers every single week with that loss to Arizona State. But this is still one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, we're talking a lot about Ohio State's defense. This Michigan State defense, I think, has proven they were for real. When they were 7-6 last year, they were still the number one rush defense in the country. So, and the defense always being up against it because the offense had so many injuries and, you know, would put them in jail and put them on short fields and, you know, we're still able to get it done. And I just think, at 20 here, this may be a little high. I mean, I thought that this was going to be maybe like 16.5 or 17. I think at 20, it's a little high, and I think with points at a premium. Now, if Ohio State goes out and scores 45 or 50 on Michigan State, then I'm going to say, okay, I'm a believer. I'm an absolute believer in the Buckeyes that, and I still think that they are for real, but I'm a believer that maybe you could argue they're the best team in the country if they do that, but that's going to be hard to do against this defense. I think they win the game, but I think this ends up being a little bit of a lower-scoring, workman-like performance for Ohio State. I can see like a 26-13 or something like that.
All right, a lot of good thoughts on the college football side. And we got one more item of business here with Wes, and that is the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open. This one kind of in your backyard at TPC Summerlin. Koepka, Cantlay, DeChambeau, Scott, Simpson, Finau, Matsuyama, Gary Woodland. A lot of good players here in this tournament. Before we break down the handicap, you going to head on over there and check it out?
I am actually going over there on Thursday. And unfortunately, I got weekend times that conflict with when they're going to be playing. The final groups are going to be playing out there Saturday and Sunday. So tomorrow is likely my day on Thursday to go out there and spend several hours with the morning and the afternoon flight. So I'm looking forward to it. And credit to the tournament organizers, Patrick Lindsay and all the crew over there at the TPC Summerlin, and with this tournament, this is probably one of the best fields and certainly one of the best ones I've seen in a while in this event.
Well, you got the Asian Swing coming up, and there's also a new event in Japan, I believe, as part of the Asian Swing. So, you know, you got some guys that just want to get back into form, and that's always interesting because you get these world-class dudes that maybe haven't played for a month or so they're all getting short prices based on reputation and talent. The guys that have been playing week after week after week, maybe the guys that you want to focus on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look, and the right guy is favored in terms of the number one player in the world, that being Brooks Koepka, 10-1, but he has not played since the Tour Championship. Now, maybe he comes out super motivated because losing that Player of the Year award to Rory McIlroy at the end of the year. However, he hasn't played a lot lately. And, you know, maybe this is, hey, I'm going to go out to Vegas with my girlfriend, my wife, my significant other to see some shows, eat some good dinners at some of these five-star restaurants, and then I play how I play. So maybe treating it as part of a vacation, but also it's tough to take some really short, chalky guys in this event because of the lower scoring and because it is more of a birdie fest where you're going to see 20, 21, 22 under. And the fact that really the only defense for this course is if the wind can blow, which it can out here this time of year, it's not going to this week, because if you look back in 2017 when Patrick Cantlay won, when you look at kind of the recent history of the tournament, it's a lot of 20 under, 21 under, 24 under. And then that Cantlay score in 2017, the winning score was 9 under par. Well, that's because the winds really blew heavy that week. So this isn't a course where, you know, you're going to grind out pars. I mean, you're going to have to make birdies. And when you have those type of events, that opens the field up really to a lot more players.
So, as you said, it doesn't seem like it's going to be too bad from a wind standpoint. I'm sure if it would have been windy, you would have had to look at some more wind players, maybe some European Tour type guys that are playing here, or just guys that, you know, have proven that they play well in the wind. But who have you looked at here this week for this tournament?
Yeah, of the short guys, and I know you mentioned some of them, but of the short guys, and he's around 25, 30-1, a little bit of a local angle here. I like Colin Morikawa, who did win earlier this summer in the Barracuda Championship up in Reno. So he has won in the state, so he can do the silver state double, if you will. Morikawa is a guy that actually has moved here to Las Vegas. He's living here. I believe he's still completing the building of his home out here. But has moved here, has played a lot of golf here, and really kind of fits the bill in terms of the running theme that we've seen so far in the fall series, and that's that young players are winning. Joaquin Niemann, 20 years old, wins the Greenbrier. Sebastian Munoz, 26 years old, wins the Sanderson Farms. Cameron Champ, 24 years old, wins the Safeway Open last week in Napa Valley. So these young guys are winning these events this type of year. And I like what I saw out of Morikawa. He wasn't a contender, but he did get a top 10 last week at the Safeway when he hadn't played golf in over a month. So I thought that was a pretty solid showing for a guy that had been off for a while to come back out there and get in the top 10. And look, he's a guy that can really score low and make a lot of birdies. The ball striking is absolutely impeccable. I mean, you really couldn't compare his stats because he didn't have enough tournaments, because he had to get the temporary membership because he turned pro early in the summer. So he got the temporary membership, and then the win at the Barracuda got him his 2-year exemption on the tour. So he's still got a lot to work for really here, in the fact that because he doesn't have a lot of tournaments, he doesn't have a lot of rankings. So he's trying to get in that top 50 stead that gets him in pretty much all the majors and all the tournaments. And best way to do that is to win in a wide open field like this. So of the short price guys, he was the guy I liked best at 25-1.
What about some of the longer shots you were looking at?
Yeah. One I'll go with in 40-1, not a total long shot, but I did like Ches Reavy here at this event. And Reavy is an interesting guy because he's kind of, I think, starting to play the best golf of his career after he had so many injuries early on. Historically really good at desert golf and was tied for fourth in Scottsdale, Arizona earlier this year. Won the Travelers after 3 top 4 finishes, which were in Phoenix, Stony Open, another West Coast tournament that he usually plays well at, and then the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, and then was able to get a win at the Travelers, and then
got a fifth at the Tour Championship. So he has the metal, I think, to compete and even defeat better type of fields in which we have this week. Shot 61 here back in 2016. If you look at the overall course form, I mean, nothing really stands out to you. I think his best finish is in the low 20s, but he's got the ability to go low on the layout. Brian Harman, kind of a recent form guy at about 70-1, a couple top six finishes his last couple times out, was a guy I liked. Kurt Kitayama as a local type angle long shot, about 200 or so to 1, and I know he's been tipped by a couple other people. Played his college golf at UNLV. Plays mostly on the European Tour. He's actually won twice in the calendar year. One at Mauritius back in December of 2018, and then in Oman in March 2019. So he's only played one PGA Tour event this year, and that was the PGA Championship that he qualified for. So this is a big event for him, actually, to kind of get enough points where maybe he can start to qualify for that specialty tour membership that Morikawa and Matt Wolf and Hovland and some of these other guys were able to get. So a homecoming for him at 200-1, and then another long shot. And you got to, I mean, when you hear this name, you're going to be like, oh my God, he's played so awful lately. But Zach Johnson at a little over 100-1, only one top 10 and 19 starts last season on the tour, but he did finish 14th at the Sanderson Farms, which was his best finish since April at the RBC Heritage. Ball striking starting to come back, and so far for the fall series, he's first in greens and regulation. He's hitting 86.1% of his greens. So this is not a course really geared to bombers. This is a course that the length, I think, keeps everybody in. So Zach would kind of fall into that category. And I think he's saying he's feeling good about his game and the best that he's felt in a long time. So I felt at triple digits to one, this is a guy maybe that could sneaky be on the first page of the leaderboard on Sunday.
Wes Reynolds is working. You can find on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one contributor to the VSiN Point Spread Weekly newsletter. And you're also on VSiN. When can people check out your segments on the show?
Okay. Monday, 6 to 10 Pacific, the Green Zone, usually during the Monday night football sequence. Also Thursdays and Fridays, 8 to 10 Pacific on the same show. And then Saturday from 2 to 6 Pacific. And Sunday from 3 to 7 Pacific. So we're usually in the late windows of those games kind of for the live wagering scenarios on the weekend for both college and pro football.
Once again, you can find Wes on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We covered a lot of ground here on today's show, and we'll do it all over again next week.
All right, you got it, Adam, anytime.
There you go. Wes Reynolds, again, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. VSiN Point Spread Weekly Newsletter, and also on VSiN, which you can find on SiriusXM and also over at VSiN.com. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Lots of college football. We'll work in some NFL. And then I'll finish up the show on my own talking about some of the college football games that we have not gotten to here over the course of the week. Friday Super Contest segment for week 5, and then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.